So welcome all to the final Q&A of 2023. Glad so many people could join us. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday so far. Later on this evening, the deck will go up on our website along with the audio track and the contents of the chat window. And we have a good number of things on for this evening, I believe. Welcome all to any guests that are joining us. If you want to join, I've pasted into the chat window a link where you can go on our website to join, but feel free to always keep joining or keep attending our meetings as a guest. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Yes, we do have a number of things, so we'll get right into it. And I have a tiny share of a blast from the past, which even I didn't know about. I was kind of interested in looking at the speed of my USB data transfers, really USB ports. And as you all know, there are various flavors of USB from 1.0 to 3.x these days. And one of the big differentiators is the data transfer speed, which you can see here in megabits per second. So when I bought some new flash drives, and they weren't running incredibly quickly, I didn't think. So I decided I'd like to check on the speed of the data transfer on my actual computer. I looked around the web for a tool to do that, and it turns out that Microsoft has one built into Windows, and it's had one for quite a time. It's called a system assessment tool, WinSAT. And you can see here from the Microsoft page that it applies through Vista and Windows 8, but actually it runs on Windows 10 and Windows 11 also, although you notice in the purple here that it's not being updated regularly, and they suggest looking for something else. However, the tool is perfectly valid, and it's built into Windows 10, so I thought I would give it a whirl and see what it did. And here's the documentation for it. You run it with a WinSAT command, a disk parameter. You can give it various parameters, but all you really need is the minus drive or the hyphen drive parameter, and then a drive letter. And note that you give it drive C or drive D or drive W, whatever, but you don't use the colon. In this particular command line, it doesn't want the colon. So here we go with running that on my system. If the mouse wheel wouldn't change the slide for me. But here's the command, WinSAT disk dash drive E, and then it goes through the various parameters. And if you don't give it any parameters, then it basically does everything. So it does random reads, sequential writes. And then eventually you get some numbers down the bottom here where random reads are 12 megabytes per second. Note that megabytes, not megabits. Sequential reads, 66, and sequential writes are 10. Interestingly there, the sequential read is much faster than the sequential, than the random read, by a factor of, what, 5, I guess. And the same with the writes. So random reads and sequential writes are much slower than sequential reads on my system and this USB drive. And if you convert that to megabits per second, it means multiplying this number by 8. So that's like 8 6 of 48. So around 500 megabits per second, which is showing me that this is a USB 2 data port, and it's probably running at about the right speed. And I have no idea why it chokes up when it's doing sequential writes rather than, or rather sequential random reads rather than sequential reads. Don't know why it takes so much longer, but it does. Anyway, if you're interested in the speed of your data transfer on your USB ports, then that's a tool that's built into Windows that you can actually give it a try. Okay, moving along, talking about computer problems. Chris has a question here from a number.
Just a comment too on that, Alan. I wasn't aware of that command either. So, thank you very much for that. That's kind of cool. So we had a question come in from Michelle Haddad, and this came into the suggestion box at opcug.ca email address. So just a plug for that. Anybody who has a question or you want to share something, that's the email address to let us know. So he said that from time to time on his desktop computer, the computer would freeze and the screen would go blank for 10 to 15 seconds and then it would come back. And he mentioned that he does use Bitdefender as his anti-malware solution. And he suspected that he could have a security problem, what was causing this. And he took the computer back to the people who built the computer. And they said that there was no security issue, but he did have no indication from them what they actually did to come to that conclusion that there was no security issue. Next. So he was wondering, is it this behavior indicative of a security problem? And is it possible that some hacker got onto his computer and got something embedded deep in the operating system where maybe Bitdefender was unable to detect it? And or is it just, a function of age or something else going wrong? Next. So you're wondering, should he be worried about it? And where could he take it for deep dive into the system to seek out any dangerous software that might have gotten installed on the system? And I think he did the right thing by bringing it here first, and maybe he won't have to take it anywhere else. Now, I will say before I go on that the next slides that I'm coming up with are just off the top of my head answers to, not a really thorough understanding of what could be the problem. It's a little bit vague, which is understandable. So everybody put on their thinking cap, and if anybody else has some ideas of things that Michelle can try, by all means, chime in. Next. So I think that the first thing is, Bitdefender is a very well-respected program. And so, there's nothing wrong with sticking with that, but all anti-malware programs can miss something from time to time. So maybe it is something that Bitdefender is actually missing. Next. So what you could do is try a free on-demand scan. And I have links on here, and I'll paste them into the chat as well. So I have links here for some free on-demand scans that you can do on your computer. Now, some of them come from very well-respected companies like ESET and Trend and things like that. And so why do these companies give away free on-demand scans? Well, my conclusion is that the reason why they'll do it is they're hoping that one of their program will find something on your computer that your on-demand or on-access scanner missed, and therefore you say, oh wow, they're better than what I'm currently using, and switch to it. And the fact is, you can't use this as your only antivirus on your computer. You need something that is an on-access scanner that is always checking to see as things are written to disk or are read from disk or exist in memory to see whether they're malware or not. These are, a point-in-time check. So it's pretty easy for them to give it away. And if you like it, then you end up having to buy their for-profit commercial program. Next. But they're a good double check. But in this case here, I really don't think that malware is the problem. I've never heard of malware having symptoms like that, where a computer freezes, the screen blanks, and then recovers. Now, I seriously actually question whether the computer was actually freezing. I suspect that it was not freezing, that the screen went blank, and it was interpreted as being, oh, the computer's frozen. But I suspect that all it really was that the screen went blank and then came back. So when he brought it into the people who built the machine, they probably checked it out with a number of anti-malware programs. That's one of the first things that anybody testing a system for problems is going to want to check and see if it's malware on the system. So they probably checked it out already with that. But as I said, not a bad thing to do your own free on-demand scans on your system from time to time. Next. So I think it actually could be a hardware issue or a driver problem. And in particular, video card, because of the fact that the screen went blank and then recovered. So in Windows, if the video driver crashes for any reason, Windows will automatically reload the driver. And it does that because it basically it's going to have to in order for you to continue using the computer. It's not like you could have, say, your USB driver go, and then all of a sudden, you know, you could continue to use your system, do a shutdown and reboot and things like that. Video driver goes and you have a blank screen, you're pretty much dead in the water. So Windows will reload the driver. Next.
That's interesting, Chris, because I actually have that that issue from time to time on my Windows box, but it only lasts for a few seconds.
Yeah, usually it is. It's quite quick. But now we'll go into what you actually do. If you suspect that this is what is really happening, is that the video driver is crashing and Windows reloading the driver, now what do you do about it? So what you can do is you can run Control Panel. And this is Microsoft in their infinite wisdom. After, I think, about 10 years, they still have not migrated everything from Control Panel to the Settings app. And this is one of the things that still exists in Control Panel, doesn't exist in Settings. So you go to Control Panel, System and Security, Security and Maintenance, and go to Reliability Monitor. When you load it, you'll get a screen that looks similar to this. And so you have dates going across horizontally, and then you have indicators on there where there are events that Windows has deemed noteworthy for some reason or another, either critical, a warning, or just an informational item. Next. What you can do is you can click on any day in the top panel where there are icons showing, either the critical, which is that red X, or warnings, the yield sign, the yellow yield sign, or just informational in the blue. So you click on that, and then next, the lower panel will actually show the details of what failed or what Microsoft is trying to bring to your attention about that particular event or events that happened on that particular day. Next. So now what you want to do is right after you have a screen freeze on you, go into Reliability Monitor, and you should have events that actually happen on that particular day. It's pretty much instantaneous that as soon as Windows notices something that needs to be brought to your attention through Reliability Monitor, it will show up immediately in that. It's not like you have to reload it or come back the next day or anything like that. It'll be there. Next. Now, what I did in this case is I actually forced the video driver to reload. And you can do that with Windows Control Shift B, and that will actually basically crashes the video driver. Well, it doesn't crash the video driver, but it does cause the video driver to reload. And, that should be video driver to load reload. And it will show up in Reliability Monitor, so I just wanted to show how it could show up. And in this case, it just thought it was a hardware failure. or hardware error of some description. But you should end up seeing something when the video goes blank on you and then recovers. You probably will see something in there, and it may have more information than what you see right here where it just says hardware error. Or it might not. So what do you do then? Next. So if it appears to be hardware failure or something like that, try updating the drivers. In particular, video drivers are really, really notorious for causing problems on Windows machines. And the first thing to do would be to see if Windows Update has updated video drivers. So this is in Windows 11. You'd go to Windows Update, Advanced Options, Next. And then under the Advanced Options, you go to Optional Updates, Next. And then you'll have various updates that may be available, including potentially a video driver update. And if there is one, you could try that one and see if that fixes the problem for you. What if it doesn't? Next. So the next thing you have to do is update the video driver from somewhere else. If Microsoft Windows is not offering you an update, then you have to go around that problem. So you right-click on the Start button, and you go to Device Manager in the pop-up, Next. And then you expand out the display adapters and find out what display adapter or adapters you have on your system. And in this case, on my system, I have an NVIDIA GeForce RTX 3070 Ti. And what I would then do is go to NVIDIA And if you just Google for NVIDIA driver updates, it'll get you to the right spot, and then it'll bring you to a generic page probably on NVIDIA. You can put in, you know, the exact card that you have. In this case, I would plug in GeForce RTX 3070 Ti, check to see whether there are updated video drivers available, and if so, go ahead and install them. Now, that's about the end of what I was thinking I would look at. Next. So, does anybody else have any other idea about what might be the issue here or additional things that people should try in the case where they're getting, you know, a blank screen and then it recovers? I see Natalie, or I see Elizabeth had, I had a blue screen of death on my old Dell Inspiron, and I did a defrag, et cetera, and it seemed to help. Yeah, blue screen of death is not going to be, well, it could be caused, I suppose, by a video driver, but blue screens of death are often caused, almost exclusively, I think, caused by things that are running in Ring Zero. So drivers, they all run really, really tight to the hardware on the computer, and they're the most likely cause of blue screens of death is to actually have a driver issue. Whenever you have a screen of death, it will have a stop code. And so take a picture while that's on the screen and then Google for it afterwards. I can guarantee that in the majority of the cases, it's not going to point very definitively at what the solution to your problem is, but it's a starting point at least. Natalie said, I have a compatibility problem with my video card in an old computer that was built. Similar issue. Yeah.
There were a couple of comments earlier, Chris.
Okay.
Jeff agrees with you that he says, my thoughts on screen blanking, it looks like a pause, is that it's a video issue. Perhaps there's too much demand on the system. I would lower the resolution to see if there's any difference, or if the system allows it, increase the memory given to the video card if it's using integrated video.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think you could actually do that. I've never tried. I thought basically the video card could steal any memory that it actually wanted from system RAM if it was using an integrated video card, but I could definitely be wrong on that. So that'd be something to look into for sure.
And Harvey agrees that the reliability monitors are useful for troubleshooting.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a shame that Windows doesn't, or Microsoft doesn't surface that tool a little bit more prominently, because I have found on numerous occasions that, you know, whenever I have a crash or something like that, I'll usually go to Reliability Monitor and take a look and see if it gives me any further information that might help me figure out what the problem was. And you can see over time as well, so you can see if there's some background process that is just, you know, crashing every couple of days or something like that. And so look for a replacement or an update to the program that maybe will behave a little bit better.
I can interject.
Yep.
So I don't feel like typing tonight. A visual inspection. Check that cards are seated and cables are plugged in.
Good point.
In particular, check for if there's any cables at all, particularly around the power supply. See if there's any nicks in the cables, and you might have to flex them a little bit and look at them. But, you know, I had some intermittent problems with an old PC, and about 5 years into the problems, I found one connector to the SATA drive that had a little nick in just underneath the connector.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, that. expletive deleted.
Yeah.
That's not a video thing, but it could, you know, a power issue can relate to a video thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure. Issues. Yeah, and if it is a dedicated video card, reseating the card, that's a good idea. And the cable.
Physical inspection, dusting it off.
Yeah. Now, again, in this particular instance, it probably is not the issue, because I would assume that any place that's building PCs that he brought it back to and said, you know, is there a security problem? I would assume that they would go through those sort of things as well, but hard to say.
Yeah, I said, well, They might just be looking at the oh, he said malware. Check for malware and don't even look at the PC.
It could be. Yeah, that
I've
could
seen
be.
Places do that too. But anyway.
Anyhow, I don't think that Michelle is on the call tonight, but I'll send him an email saying that he should check out the audio track to hear. Okay, thanks, folks. Other areas to consider are the apps running, hardware temperatures, et cetera, from Harvey. Yeah, good point. Might be that. Intermittent problems are a real pain because, of course, if you bring it to the shop, it won't exhibit itself then, you know, when you're paying high-priced help to look at things, you know, then it'll behave perfectly. Anyhow, okay. If anybody else thinks of anything else, any other possibilities, by all means, throw them into the chat. Or if we have time at the end, we'll revisit this if there are any other comments on it. And so, thanks, folks, and I guess we'll move on.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So next up, we have Bob Harris, who has a little item for us in his own inimitable style.
Very good. Thank you, Alan. Thank you. I love the mouse there. Anyway, before we start, I've had a few emails, and for all those that have concerns, I can assure you this presentation contains no elephants. Elephants are afraid of mice. Now,
look
I know
the
many folks
that scared them away.
Yes. I know many folks here were considered getting one of those Fitbits, but they're expensive, and you probably don't want the hassle of wearing something on your wrist. So here's another option for you. Next, please. In August of this summer, I was in the Chrome Web Store, and I found Mouse Odometer. Next, please. I saw this in the store, and I was impressed right away. It had 1 5-star rating. So I know that was good. However, I don't mind trying out and testing various Chrome extensions, but the little featured thing on there, it means a little more than the rating, and that's important too. So you can install these things, take them off, but these badges are important. So here we get the badges here. So this is a little more on the badges. The Chrome team actually evaluates the thing at, I'm not sure it's a manual test, but they give it a not all the apps or the extensions in the Chrome store have these little featured tags. Most don't, or many don't. I'm comfortable with the ones that have the tags. Maybe I'm wrong, but next, please. Okay, so back to Mouse Odometer. This is a screenshot from the Chrome Web Store, and there's a little bit of an idea of what we're getting into, show odometer and such. And next, please. And some of the background on here. Essentially, this is a mouse odometer for your Chrome browser. And once again, it's got a single 5-star rating. It's pretty darn good. So, and next, please. A little more on the application before I downloaded it. It's made by a fellow named Travis Lawrence of the United States. It's a very small little gizmo. There's some privacy things that they guarantee, and this is part of the, I believe, the featured thing, and I trust that. And it looked all good to me. So I figured, next, please. It'd be time to install it. And same screenshot again. Next again, please. Okay, so when you have this installed on your computer, the top right corner is the actual top right corner of my Chrome browser. In there, you'll see a little red mouse. You click on that mouse, the larger panel opens up, and here you have Mouse Odometer. There's also a Show Odometer tab on there, and when that is checked, you'll have a spinning odometer just like in your car on the bottom right of your screen. Those little bars across there, they're all different colors, and if you hold your mouse over those, you'll see that what your usage was for the past days and stuff. And next again, please. So this is my mouse hovering over a given day, and it was December the 8th, I guess it was here, and on that day it went 15. Anyway, it gives you the exact pixels you're traveling per day. On this day, I think we've got here 7,837 miles in total in pixels. If I clicked it again, it would show me I have over 12,000 kilometers traveled with the mouse. And next, please. Okay, so as I was creating this presentation, I wanted to learn a little more about Travis. He's the creator of this stuff. He's got a Twitter account here, which is on X right now, I guess. He makes other little things. And a casual fellow from somewhere, I think it was in California. And next, please. So I've been using this now for about 6 months. I figured I should do a review. So now, Mouse Odometer has 2 5-star ratings. And it's still featured. So next, please. So I gave him a good review on there, and I figured, why not? He made it. It's all 3. And he said, you made my day with your review, Bob. He was very happy to get someone knocked. He said, thanked him for the mouse odometer. I enjoyed it. So he'd love to say thank you for the hard work he does and gives it away for free. A thank you wouldn't hurt. So next again, please. So mouse odometer may not do much for your fitness, but it'll certainly give you something to brag about at the water heater conversations. Next, please. Oh, so you ran 5 miles this morning. That's cute. I moved my mouse pointer, a virtual distance equivalent to the circumference of the Earth, twice. Next, please. Mouse odometer, it's not something you need, but it's just, it's fun. It's fun stuff. And if you're in the Chrome store, my advice is have fun in there. Everything is free. And I feel safe with the featured badge. It's on many of them, but not all of them. Mouse odometer, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. A big thumbs up there from Stu. And some other comments coming in too. Very good.
And Elizabeth too.
Okay, next up we have a presentation from Bob Walker, and Bob's going to share his screen, unmute his microphone, and take it away.
Okay, let me just bring up the presentation here. And there we go. So I call this fraud alert because in the 2 or 3 months leading up to the holidays, I came up across a few sort of sketchy areas there as I was looking to buy some stuff. So at this time of the year, we have anything from the pre-Black Friday sales to the January sales. It's a great time of year to get great deals on the products you want. So let's look at a few ways of to avoid being taken advantage of. The first one I came across was phony review sites. Quite often I Google best whatever for whatever the year is to find the current ratings on a type of software, hardware, or anything else I'm looking to buy. And I've gotten links to sites that have given great comparative reviews of the best products available at the time. Lately, however, I've come across some phony review sites that were run or sponsored by the product that got the top rating, and it usually got a notably better score on the next than the next best product rated on the site, and usually a much better score than the same product got on a legitimate review site, if indeed that product was even reviewed by anybody at all. So the sites are set up to look like a genuine review site because it's giving ratings on a lot of brands or models you might have heard of before. So how do you spot a phony site? The site will have probably have an ambiguous name, like consumerexpertreview.com is the one in particular that I ran across. And the homepage for this particular site actually even says this site may earn from qualifying purchases from Amazon and other links. So in other words, they're trying to sell stuff. And the homepage for this site doesn't have any links to any reviews. At least it didn't a few days ago. And you apparently get to the reviews through doing Google searches. Legitimate sites are more likely to have names you've likely heard of, such as, and I want to make a note that this list is very far from being complete, but you'll recognize sites like Consumers Reports, and this is a paid site. You get good reviews at the New York Times and Wirecutter, which is a division of the New York Times. PC Magazine does lots of reviews on software and hardware, same as CNET. Trustpilot reviews all sorts of stuff. And there are many, many other legitimate review sites. On a phony site, the top-rated product is likely a brand you've never even heard of before, because popular name brands don't normally set up phony sites. The top-rated product is often significantly cheaper than most of the name brands listed below it. And the reviews of the not top-rated products have likely been plagiarized from legitimate review sites. There may be links from the phony review site to purchase all of the rated products, but the links lead somewhere like Amazon, and keep in mind Amazon pays a bounty for these links. Every time you follow one of these links to Amazon, the originating site gets a couple of pennies, and it doesn't take long after thousands of links are followed to come up to a lot of money. And not each the links don't lead to each brand's own website. And if you note that Amazon's own rating and review of the so-called top-rated product is often significantly lower than the phony site's review and rating. Now, I came across this looking for one of these fitness-type watches. I did the search for the top reviews on these, and the leading one was $50, whereas the Fitbits and the Apple Watches and all that are in the $200, $300, $400 range. Out of curiosity, I bought the $50 watch from Amazon. It turned out to be a piece of junk, and I ended up returning it. But it was quite disappointing, which is why I originated this little presentation. The next category is too good to be true. Recently, I've come across some deals on name brand software, such as from Microsoft, such as Office or Windows, and from other software companies for ridiculously low prices that just seemed too good to be true. The deals came through several different sites like Neowin.net, Tech Republic, and even the Ottawa Citizen site had some links to these deals. I just want to note that the Ottawa Citizen site, some of the ads on that site are made to look like stories, not like actual ads. And as well, I got reviews on referrals on some of these deals through other users of the OPCUG forum. Regardless of who the offer is through, the fulfillment is quite often by and the payment is to a company called Stack Commerce, and they're rated 4.2 out of 5 by Trustpilot. So they're a relatively reputable company. A lot of these deals are usually time limited, sometimes just for the day, like on Black Friday or Cyber Monday. And most of these deals are actually usually legitimate. For example, in the last couple of months, I've bought Microsoft Office 2021 Professional Plus. That's their deluxe package. A license for three PCs, not just for one, basically for Canadian $30. and I got a deal on Microsoft Windows 11 Pro, another deal for $30. In the rare event that you do end up getting into a deal that is phony, or there are problems getting the order fulfilled properly, you may be able to resolve it through PayPal or whoever your credit card company is and see what they can do for you. Next category is hidden subscriptions. I was recently sent a special offer from a company called Inpixio. They do photo editing software and photo editing apps, and I reviewed their Photo Focus app back last August, and you can see that in a post called Hocus Focus. The deal was for Inpixio Photo Studio Ultimate, which is a fairly well-featured photo editing package. And it also included something like 30 LUTs, which are lookup tables for changing the color balances, a whole bunch of extra backgrounds, and a bunch of other extras for only $30 for five PCs. And I was going to bite because it's only $30, and it is actually a fairly good package. But then I noticed in the finest of the very fine print, on the very last page before you actually click to confirm the order, that the $30 wasn't for a lifetime license for that version of the products, but instead it was for the first year of a subscription, and then it would renew automatically at $99 a year. So you're basically paying $99 a year for this product package. So it's always good to beware the fine print. And speaking of fine print, there's lots of great deals this time of year on products, including electronics, but make sure there is no fine print about the deal you're interested in that labels it as refurbished or open box if you are expecting to get a brand new product. And so let's remember, let's be careful out there. And I'll stop the share, and that's it for tonight.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Bob. And if you're interested in a different take on scams, which I guess some of those things were, I just remind you that our January meeting, which will be on the 10th, we have Constable Sebastian LeMay from the Ottawa Police Service, who's going to be talking about all kinds of different online scams. So that's something to look forward to. However, in the meantime, we have a contribution here from our favorite photo guru, who I don't think is going to be talking about photos. When she unmutes her microphone.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Alan. So yeah, I just had some musings on AI. It's not a rant or anything. It's just some things that crossed my mind. So next, Alan, I'll get you to put up the first bullet. So I was thinking, what would AI have been like if it had been around when I was working? Because I've been retired for 5 years now. So I was just thinking back in terms of the work environment. So next. So first of all, as an older employee, what was it like when I was working? Well, when I was thinking about creating a document or something like that, anybody my age, who is me or my boss or the CEO, we were all kind of about the same age, we all knew grammar. Nobody had to correct my grammar. That was pounded into us in school with the reading, writing, arithmetic kind of regime. So, you know, my writing was always correct, and sometimes they wanted to fine-tune it. I was writing more scientific things, more methodological-type articles, so sometimes they needed it a little more flowery. But for the most part, there was no major corrections to do. So next. So, but as a manager, and I was managing younger and younger people as they were coming on, I realized that they didn't have the same grounding in grammar and things like that. And that was fine if they were just doing an internal memo. I didn't care if it was absolutely perfect as long as the idea got across. But if they were going to submit a paper for publication or we were asking for money, it had to be perfect. So, of course, I ended up getting involved to help them. It's not like we had a free editor around to help us. So the manager would, you know, review the work and help them fine tune it. So that was something that I felt like right now, if that might, a manager might not have to do that as much if somebody could use AI to at least help them do the first cut. So next. And I was thinking in particular for a new Canadian where English or French isn't their first language, here they are, they're trying to write a document that's good enough for scientific publication, and they're probably, you know, shy to have it come into me as in a mess, right? So they're trying to write it as best they can. Maybe they'd ask a colleague before they ask me for help, and that takes time away from the colleague who might end up editing a scientific article, but they're not going to get their name on it because all they were doing was correcting grammar or whatever. So for me, they didn't have the same opportunities for promotion, even though they were working hard and they were smart, because they couldn't always get the English fast enough out for a rush job or go down to Parliament Hill or wherever it may be, speak off the top of their head. So for having AI at the disposal of a new Canadian, I think would really be helpful to help them compete better in a workplace where they're just as smart as everybody else. They just don't have the same command of the English or French language. So next. And then my last thought was, when you're doing a scientific paper, usually what you do first is research and find out, well, who else has written about this so you can say how great and unique your work is. So you do that research. And sometimes it is hard to, you know, you can use Google and everything, but probably AI is going to do a better job of giving you that background and making sure you're aware of who else is working on this topic. As, you know, you can't be the only person in the world type thing, but it gives you a quicker way of analyzing how and in what way your work is unique and how you want to pitch it. So it's just some musings. I just, my brother-in-law's a teacher, so I was talking to him today, and I said, well, obviously in the world of education, assessment has to change a little bit because, you know, anybody can write, have an essay written and hand it in. And he says, yeah, they're trying to go towards, you know, the essay has to be done in place in front of the teacher. But he said what the AI is helping is creating pathways for each student to learn differently and with different resource material. The AI helps the teacher create these pathways. So I just find it's interesting and has a lot of potential. So I'll just be interested in people's comments.
Thanks, Linda. One thought that comes to mind for me is I wonder how efficient AI is at researching scientific papers, because often scientific papers are behind paywalls.
Yes, this is true. But I'm presuming that within each paywall, at some point in time, there's going to be an AI function, right? So that if you do have the ability to access a journal, they're going to eventually set up a better search mechanism for you than what currently exists. I mean, I'm just talking future type thing.
Yeah. Well, there'd certainly be a huge benefit if it did good literature searches.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
What did you
say
there, Chris?
I think that's cool. I think it's something that everybody should think about because it's coming on gangbusters. I mean, it was only a year ago that ChatGPT, you know, first arrived on the public scene, and look at how far it's come in just over a year. Yeah. Imagine what it's going to be looking like 5 years from now.
So Carol's saying that she worries it's a crutch and slows down actual learning. And yes, I think in the education area, it's going to have to be, you know, they have to do this carefully and make sure that people are still learning. But I think it's going to free up a lot of managers' time, colleagues' time, and things like that, so that the whole process of getting, you know, it's not just published papers, it's getting documents ready for a CEO or for a conference or whatever, will just, you know, take less time. That's what I'm hoping.
May I make a comment, Linda?
Pardon?
I wonder if I could make a comment here about what your topic is.
Sure.
I just finished this book by Michio Kaku. It's called Quantum Supremacy. And it's pretty amazing about what's going on. But he mentions towards the end about artificial intelligence. And when they get together with artificial intelligence, with quantum computing, everything changes. And this is a book about artificial intelligence. It's called The Coming Wave by Mustafa Soliman. Just getting into that one. And I'm sure it has a lot of things related to what you're talking about, Linda. And yeah. I just got those up because they're on my desk.
Yeah, and Sandy brought them to you, right?
Anyway, that's it for me today. Bye.
Okay, John.
Elizabeth has a good point here, Linda. She says when things have to go up quickly and multiple revisions have been done, it's great to have AI do the last sweep through the grammar.
Yeah.
And I can see that when you, especially when you've got that multiple revisions thing going on, and I'm a thorough review of the final product.
And it could probably even, like, sometimes you get so many writers that the style becomes really garbled because, but I'll bet you AI can just take a document and put it into one style so it's smoother.
Well, if we can't now, it soon will be able to.
Soon will, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of downsides, but it's just, you know, I'm just trying to see some of the positive things that might, especially in the workforce where, you know, you're going to have to survive perhaps on fewer employees if you can't get them hired or if you can't afford to hire them. And so you just want to keep everything as efficient as possible.
Yeah.
Darlene says she works in education and she knows that younger teachers are using it in their planning. And Jeff says AI is definitely becoming better at generating incorrect information.
Yes, there's that too.
Okay, and so next up, I think we have an update on the library presentations from Chris.
Yeah, the just a couple of days ago, the library actually came back with their proposed schedule after I had sent them out a list of all the presentations we were willing to give. And so we now have a final schedule for January through March of 20 presentations with 10 different topics, three presenters, myself, Linda, and Alan. And the event list is there, and posted into the chat another link which will bring up just the OPL presentations on our website. So next. So we offered 17 topics in total, and they only chose 10. And it really is up to the branches to say what ones they want. I did post that link there, which is the total list of all of the presentations that we've offered the branches. So what I would suggest, if you're interested in some other topics that are not currently being offered, take a look at the list. If there is something, you could talk to your local branch of the Ottawa Public Library and speak to them and say, you know that this presentation was being offered, and you know, if they're interested, they might want to request an additional one. Even with a so-called finalized schedule, we're happy to add additional presentations if branches come back with additional requests. Next. Now, the other thing is, if the OPL branches don't want any of those topics that you're particularly interested in, we may be able to actually give them out over either a regular monthly meeting or some other time, another evening of the month or whatever, using our own Zoom account. And for the regular monthly meetings, the only one that's open currently until next fall is April, so it's currently open. So if you see a topic there on the list that you think would be good to present at the regular monthly meeting, we'd be happy to do that over the OPCUG Zoom account. Next, just a list of the topics that were offered are on the screen there. But again, I'm not going to go through them in detail. You can actually go and see the link where it has the full descriptions of all of these presentations as well. Those are the ones that I've offered. Next. These are the ones that Linda has offered and Alan has offered to the library. And so, again, if you see anything there, that is not currently being offered by the Ottawa Public Library, you can request it. And that's it for me.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Okay, so I think our final prepared item for tonight is this question that came in from Ron. And I don't believe Ron's on the call tonight, but he's going to pick up the final output. Some routers, which are only 2 to 3 years old, and a couple of Core i7 computers. I think one of them must be a desktop and the other one a laptop. And he's asking if there's any organization that repurposes these kind of electronics, perhaps to people who can't afford them. Because otherwise, he notes that e-waste collection seems to be the only other option. So the first thing that came to my mind was that presentation we had a number of years ago from CompuCorp, who still have a website. They've actually moved out of their Somerset Street premises, and now they're a completely online operation. But they have a website, and they say that if you donate equipment, then you can receive a tax receipt, and they still have a store where you can buy things. So here's some examples of memory and video cards and computers, which they have on sale at the present time. However, I find that, you know, given that they're an online operation, I find their website is a bit confusing, or not very clear, shall we say. When you look up their acceptable donations, they say that they accept a wide variety of hardware and software. And if you'd like to donate, then please click here. The trouble is, when you click here, you get a 404 error. So it's not clear what hardware and software they're actually accepting. But then if I look at the things they're selling, or this is actually a page of recent donations. So some of the recent donations were a couple of laptops in the top there. And the bottom one is an iMac, a computer, a keyboard, mouse, and some iPads, and a TP-Link router, for example. Some hard drives and a wireless headset. So a whole raft of different hardware there that they've given the guy a tax receipt for his donation. Then if I go to another page and I look for how do I actually send in a hardware donation, it tells me I have to fill in a form. And the form page tells me we only accept laptops, tablets, and smartphones, which kind of is against what they're flogging on their website. So I find it a bit confusing. And then do they accept? And they say if there's something that you'd like to donate that isn't listed, then feel free to include it on the form or tell us about it. And they give an email address. So I sent them an email address and I pointed out the broken link and suggested that their information wasn't terribly clear. And I said, could you please clarify what computer hardware items you do accept? And here's the message I got back. And he basically repeats that message on the donation form. We currently accept laptops, tablets, and smartphones and small form factor desktops. So I take him at his word. I think those are the kind of things he's looking for. So Ron can probably get rid of his laptops there if he wishes. But the question is, are there other organizations that will do essentially the same thing? And a couple of things, Chris suggested National Capital Freenet. And sure enough, if you go to their website, they say in particular, if you donate an old or unused modem or router, we'll test it, reconfigure it, and provide a modem to other members. And you can also donate other unused electronic goods. Just let us know whether you want it recycled or reused. So there's a possibility. And a while ago on the Q&A session, I forget who it was, suggested this Trash Nothing, which is the reincarnation of Freecycle, where you can actually post what you want to give away Or sometimes people will post what they actually want to receive. So all these items are essentially free, giveaway or requested. So I don't know if anybody else has any other ideas for Ron.
That probably came from Natalie about the Trash Nothing, because she posted in it. I've seen a couple of people on Trash Nothing who occasionally ask for computers to refurbish for others who can't afford to buy them. That's kind of a neat idea. And Carol says somebody gave me this a few years ago, hwfottawa.org. She's got a link in the chat, so that's another option on there.
Yeah, that's the Helping with Furniture organization.
Okay.
And Darlene says they did and maybe still do take used computers for less fortunate families.
Okay.
Check their website.
Good stuff.
So there's a few options for people. If anybody has anything else, drop it into the chat or send us an email and we'll pass it along to Ron. But in the meantime, we're just inside the last 10 minutes. So if anybody has any other questions, or I don't know if there's anything we've missed already, Chris, in the...
I didn't see anything else.
Okay, so if anybody has any other questions or thoughts on the evening's proceedings so far... Natalie says the smartphones, CNIB, the National Institute for the Blind, collect used phones to refurbish, give, and train people with low vision how to use. Tax receipts are given.
Nice.
Okay, well, while you're thinking about that, let me move on to the wrap-up slides. So I just remind you that we are extending the free membership for another year. The board of directors made that decision. So if you are a member right now, as at this moment, you don't need to renew your membership. There's no need to send us any money. We are waiving membership renewal for an additional year. And that will apply to everybody who's a member in good standing as of April 1st. So that means that anybody who is not a member and who does join between now and March 31st, pays us their $20 for a one-year membership, they will become members in good standing as of April the 1st, and their membership will be extended for a second year. So this is our special 2 years for the price of one, up until March the 31st. So if you have friends, relatives, colleagues, we're interested in computers and have always wanted to join OPCUG, tell them this is the time. You get the deal. So coming up will be New Year's. So on your New Year, here's my suggestions for your New Year's resolutions. If you're not a member, join the club. You definitely want to share your favorite app, PC or Android, at a Q&A. So send us the information on that. Bridget would love to receive articles for the newsletter for 2024. Chris and I are always looking for questions, so send your question to suggestionbox@opcug.ca. And I'm sure one of these days, maybe in April, if we don't come up with a topic, we may be having a member's favorites night. So plan on making your 10 to 15 minute presentation. And the final thing, our next Q&A session, attend on January the 3rd. So sure enough, I'm sure on behalf of the board, Chris and I, we wish you all a happy new year, and we'll see you on January the 3rd.
Most definitely, I echo that. And I hope everybody takes those New Year resolutions to heart. It all helps if we all contribute, both sharing and learning.